Welcome to Obesity, a Disease, the official Obesity Medicine Association podcast exploring the many facets of the disease of obesity. Obesity, a Disease podcast is brought to you by the Obesity Medicine Association, the clinical leader in obesity medicine.
Hello, this is Dr. Nick Pennings. I'm the Chair of Family Medicine at the Campbell University School of Osteopathic Medicine and Director of Clinical Education for the OMA. And today on the podcast, we're going to be celebrating 75 years, a journey through the history of obesity medicine and obesity. And today we're going to be talking a little bit about the history of obesity medicine and then discussing this from the perspective of someone who practiced obesity medicine for a better part of his career, Dr. Alan Rader, and he'll be talking about his experience with obesity medicine. But just a little bit about the history of obesity medicine, we can look back to the 1940s where the 1947 medication called azoxyefedrine was approved for the treatment of obesity and no longer available. And part of the history of obesity medicine is medications have come and they have gone, and that has posed challenges because many of the treatments for obesity had unwanted side effects. And we are in a new age, but the journey to get there has been a long one. For the Obesity Medicine Association, it goes back to 1950 when the organization was founded, then called the National Glandular Society. And it was really the first organization that recognized that obesity was not properly understood in society, and that there needed to be a more scientific approach to the understanding and the treatment of obesity. That organization maintained itself and grew, eventually changed its name to the American Society of Bariatrics, and then in 1972 to the American Society of Bariatric Physicians. And their informal meetings were started and gatherings where physicians treating obesity, including bariatric surgeons, could discuss the treatment of obesity. And then in 1984, the American Society for Bariatric Physicians had their first national conference. And really, that was the beginning of building an educational platform for obesity medicine. And that continued to grow as obesity continued to be recognized in the 1990s, where more research was being involved in the treatment of obesity. The National Heart and Lung Blood Institute released clinical practice guidelines for obesity, and that continued to elevate the interest in obesity and the research in obesity. The 1920s brought on more options for the treatment of obesity and medications for the treatment of obesity, but also a deeper understanding, and then a process eventually for board certification, for recognition by the American Medical Association in 2013 that obesity was recognized as a chronic disease. And since then, the Obesity Medicine Association, which was named in 2015, changing it from the American Society of Bariatric Physicians to the Obesity Medicine Association, has really been at the forefront of delivering education on obesity in for clinicians around the country. And so to talk a little bit more about that history, we have Dr. Alan Rader, MD. Dr. Rader, maybe tell a little bit about yourself and your history and interest in obesity medicine.
Sure. Thanks, Nick. And thank you for the opportunity to do this with you. I've been a member of the Obesity Society for a long time. I started my background very briefly was I spent 2 years in rural Kentucky doing family practice, delivering babies, just about everything. And then got into emergency medicine and practiced emergency medicine for 15 years. And it was toward the end of my time in emergency medicine that I noticed a correlation between people with central obesity and premature heart disease. And so I developed an interest in that, especially since my belly looked like many of those patients, and I started doing some research. And I got into obesity medicine in the spring of 1997, right at the peak of the fenfen, the Weintraub studies that showed 2 years of maintained weight loss. So I left it all and got into obesity medicine. And 3 months later, the FinFin article came out, which unfortunately had a negative effect on the practice of obesity medicine. But I knew that in my heart, I truly believe that obesity medicine was going to be the future of the field of pretty much all aspects of medicine. So I found this group called the American Society of Bariatric Physicians, attended my first conference in Las Vegas in the fall of 1998, and just took off with obesity medicine, writing my own program, using medications that were available at the time. After treating lots of patients, I just believe that collecting data and practicing evidence-based obesity medicine. When I made a change in my practice, I tried to document, did it make improvements in patients' weight loss? I got active at the national level with ASBP. I ended up teaching over 80 other doctors that came and witnessed and trained in my practice to see how we did things. And I'm very proud of some things that we achieved during that time to push the practice of obesity medicine forward. In
But
the
maybe just kind of back up a little bit because there's an awful lot of interesting stuff there.
sure.
But going back to the beginning there, when you first started, you noticed central adiposity was a concern associated with disease, and actually metabolic syndrome was really just starting to be recognized as a clinical entity that was putting people at risk for cardiovascular disease. So I think your observations were in line with what was coming out at that time. But how was what was the understanding of obesity by practitioners at that time, by patients at that time, by society at that time when you were just getting into this field?
Well, I can sum it all up and with a true story that a clinician that I knew, I did a presentation at their clinic, and the clinician happened to be suffering from the disease of obesity, and the clinician, after I left, I took him to lunch to educate him about what we were doing and stuff, and one of the clinicians, the doctors that worked in the clinic with this person, as they walked out of the room, said, "Why don't fat people just get off their ass and work harder and don't eat less and exercise more?" And that was one doctor telling another doctor that had obesity, what his opinion of the cause of obesity was. And so there were two uphill battles that we had. One, convincing people that it was truly a disease. It wasn't all just about what you eat and didn't do. And two, convincing people that effective treatment was actually out there and available. So we had to fight in those days, we had to fight both those uphill battles. And
And they are uphill battles because patients, still have that
oh,
feeling.
absolutely.
Society, physicians still have that feeling. So how has that changed over the time that you practice obesity medicine? Did you see that getting much better or not?
Well, it took a long time, but thanks to some of the leadership in the American Society of Bariatric Physicians slash OMA, it took to 20, I think it was 2013, the AMA finally recognized obesity medicine as a quote disease and not a personality character defect. So that was probably one of the big things that actually helped evolve the course of obesity medicine as a treatment and moving forward. And the work that we did at our level of those of us that were actually practicing medicine, collecting data, showing long-term results could be achieved. It was a wonderful time to follow the evolution of both the effectiveness that we could do, and the rewards that we got in being a clinician in obesity medicine.
And some of those early conferences that you went to, you started going in 1998, I believe, you said. How big were they? What were they about?
First conference I went to, I want to say there was 30, 40, maybe something like that. Not many. And those early conferences, there was actually a pre-conference called the Assistance Conference. So we were trying to help at that time, the society was trying to help clinicians that were practicing full-time obesity medicine by having courses to help the people working in the office. My very first talk at a conference was teaching assistants how to use Excel spreadsheets and how to put data in, beginning weight, weight loss, percent body weight loss, and then calculate what percentage of patients lost 5% of their weight loss, 10%. So my very first talk was at the assistance conference, trying to teach how to do that and then how to help patient flow in the offices.
But they were small, basic, and maybe more focused on practice management than on the science of obesity then?
I think that's a excellent way of putting it, Nick. Because there wasn't a lot of medicines available, and until clinicians actually started sharing about the psychological aspects and the nutritional aspects of medicine, there just wasn't a tremendous a lot of science that was presented. Our society went through a time period where we were effectively told that we should be called the low-carb society, because there was a several-year period where it seemed like the conferences were strictly focused on telling everybody to do nutritionally do low-carb, and that was the only answer. And that kind of took over our conference for a few years until we realized that, you know, there's a whole lot more to it than just what you eat.
So you mentioned, 2013, the AMA recognizing obesity as a chronic disease. But what were some of the other key kind of tipping points that you saw over the years that where you really saw the paradigm shift a bit in the approach to obesity medicine?
I think there's several that we can mention as far as the paradigm. I like to think of if somebody has chest pain, you think of a differential diagnosis of cardiac, respiratory, musculoskeletal, referred gastrointestinal. And I'm very proud that I think I helped evolve the thought process of looking at obesity as having a differential diagnosis that falls into, I used to teach four basic categories: nutrition, metabolism and medication, behaviors, and psychology. And in my 20 years of practice, I think less than 1 in 10 of my patients actually have suffered with obesity based on one factor. It may have started with one factor, but as a person gains weight, it changes their psychology, how they think about themselves. It changes their behaviors. And so we as a society started teaching that, you have to look at all of those aspects in a patient. You just giving them one pill or one shot and then telling them that's going to fix their problem, if in the differential diagnosis there was something going up in their beliefs about themselves, that one aspect wasn't going to change it. It was extremely multifactorial, and I think as the science evolved about the biochemical aspects of obesity management. That's what led us into the new medications. But then I also think that as we evolved and tried to change, hey, don't beat yourself up, attack the disease, not yourself. We actually started helping with managing the behavioral and psychological aspects of the disease as
And
well.
so the four pillars seem to evolve out of that, right? Out of
That's
that concept there. But also at that same time, research was starting to dive deeper into the science of obesity and give us a better understanding. As you were getting involved, leptin was being identified, and the neurohormonal regulation of appetite began. And was that then becoming a bigger part of the conferences and the education side of obesity medicine?
I think that's where the science of obesity actually really started taking off when we could identify first order and second order level neurons of the biochemicals that increased hunger, the biochemicals that decreased hunger. And we knew that medicine was going to evolve from that. But then when we could show patients, hey, we know these chemicals, and you just can't think your way through the balance of these chemicals. And that's where the science and the practice really started taking off.
Right. Applying that pathophysiology to understanding the struggle that patients were having with obesity, and that it was much more complicated than just calories in and calories out.
Yes.
Yeah, so that was very, and then you played an increasing role in advancing education with developing programs for educating healthcare professionals around the country. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. When I said I wanted to get involved or drop out, I started putting together lectures. I gave one of the first pathophysiology lectures at a national conference and started getting involved. But it became concerning to me with us having two conferences a year that I would meet clinicians that had been to three or four conferences that yet hadn't yet started treating obesity or hadn't yet started their own practice. And so I actually started a business where I had would bring clinicians to out to my office and they would spend a week with me, and we would see 40, 50 patients a day, and they got to see how we went through the differential diagnosis with each of the patients and learning the psychological barriers that happen with the treatment of obesity. Nick, I think of a very classic example that when patients and the computer system that we wrote, we could actually graph the patient's weight loss. And after following thousands of patients, we actually learned there are characteristic points where people struggle a little bit. And the one I've started sharing early on at obesity conferences is that when you lose weight at about 10% weight loss, that's where people start to notice you. Hey, Nick, you're losing weight. You look good. Well, part of the motivation of people to get in treating their obesity is they don't like the way they look. And so as soon as people start to notice them, they lose some of that pain. If they lose pain, they lose motivation. And so with experience, learning those tough points and being able to help patients understand why those points are may be affecting them psychologically, you can help them push through those tough points. Another thing that
Definitely
happened.
sounds like the art of medicine, right? And not
That
just the science of
very well,
medicine, but the art of
that's
medicine.
art and the experience of medicine. If somebody gained weight because they had something happen to them negatively, abuse, whatever, and failed relationship, and they gained weight as protection, Then when they lose that 10%, people start to notice them. They lose that protection. They get scared. That sometimes negatively affected weight loss. So learning the art of, very well put, the art of obesity medicine, I think is a very important aspect of being a obesity medicine clinician. And I know we're going to talk about this, the future of the medicine, but one of the things that I feel about where we currently are in obesity medicine is, I'm sorry, I just don't, some of the most rewarding time periods for me in the practice of obesity medicine is when you see the patients come in, they've lost 20% of their body weight, they've got a whole new wardrobe, and they're just radiant on how they feel and how they're doing. And if they're getting their prescriptions over a phone, whoever's providing that, I call, when I gave my lectures, I started all my lectures off with what I called a bariatric moment, the good, warm, fuzzy feeling of being a weight loss doctor, because I was trying to promote and encourage clinicians to make these positive changes and being part of people's lives. And it's just, and I just feel I hope, maybe I'm wrong, but I hope the clinicians that are moving into bariatric medicine now, I hope they don't miss that wonderful, rewarding aspect of the medicine.
It's very true. I say that I like to say there's two happy moments in medicine. One is delivering a healthy baby, and the other is helping somebody lose weight.
Bingo,
And
bingo.
doing that in person, that personal connection, that interpersonal relationship really is very valuable. And that's hard to have over a telemedicine platform.
It is.
That is a question of how, what role does that play in the future of obesity medicine? On the one hand, access to care is a challenge, and on the other hand, we want to maintain that interpersonal relationship that exists when as a clinician, you're caring for a patient and helping them get on a path to fight something that they've really struggled with. So what do you see as, some of the challenges and opportunities in the future of obesity medicine?
Well, I have to believe that the greatest opportunity of obesity medicine is the prevalence now of effective and relatively safe medications. I see that as a wonderful opportunity that we should take advantage of. I think another wonderful thing that's happening is the research that's occurring in obesity medicine. The geez, you try to go back and find how many research articles were written in 1982 specifically about obesity medicine, and you could probably count them on one or two hands, where there's that many articles being published nearly every day now. So the research that's happening in obesity medicine, I think, is a fantastic, and it's going to help a lot. One of my concerns is we kind of got on to it, is it's not all just about the medicine. It's about the psychology, the art of obesity medicine. And I hope that that's not lost in just falling back on. I mean, I'm all for primary care physicians doing obesity medicine, but I think they've got to do, I hope they do enough that they get to learn and see the art of obesity medicine. And I really truly believe that's where the Obesity Medicine Association can provide some help teaching experience in for clinicians that experienced clinicians get the opportunity to share that. You know, Nick, how you got started is like most how our society grew is when we started the outreach and people came to their first obesity medicine conference. They go, "Oh my God, I've been going to medical conferences for years. I go to a medical conference and everybody's happy, everybody's cheerful. They're
Right.
sharing all the wonderful aspects." Gosh, that now you talk about, I call that a bariatric moment too, that it was fun to be one of the clinicians, leaders at a time when it was really taking off like that.
Yeah, well, and I think, that art part of medicine and obesity medicine is really important. I think back 35 years ago to the treatment of depression, and I feel that we're kind of at that same point now in obesity that depression was 35 years ago when we didn't have very many medications. They had a lot of side effects. They weren't very well tolerated, and they typically were only prescribed by psychiatrists. And then, Prozac became the first SSRI to be approved, and that really changed the dynamic that patients now were more readily treated and more treated by primary care. That we had a medication that was safe, that was effective, that could be prescribed very easily. But by the same time, we don't see the utilization of counseling, I don't think, to the degree that we should. So while the medications are being used and helping a lot of people with anxiety and depression, the role of counseling is not, in my mind, what it should be. And I fear the same thing with obesity medicine, that it becomes just a prescription that is prescribed along with the list of other medications, and it's not combined with that psychological support, with that nutritional therapy, with that encouragement for physical activity, and we need to maintain those other pillars as an important part of obesity treatment.
Exactly. And that's I would have to say that would be my fear about the future as well, that we make sure we continue that.
So I see, that we're the science is bringing us different treatment approaches, new medications, more potent medications, hopefully fewer side effects, although the newer medications, I think, have very few side effects. And so I hopefully that we'll continue to have these opportunities to treat obesity, but as we talked about, not losing the art of obesity medicine. So what are your thoughts about physicians that are looking to go into, or any clinician that is looking to go into obesity medicine? How do you think that they should approach that and learn and prepare for a field in obesity medicine?
Well, that's one of the easiest answers of any question I think that I've ever been asked in my whole career. And that is, don't just attend OMA conferences, but get active with the Obesity Medicine Association. Get on committees, ask questions, get out and try to experience, find clinicians that can show you what their results are, find out how they're achieving their results. If you decide you want to do a full-time obesity medicine practice, learn through the experience of the people that are there. I believe the conferences still offer courses or parts of the conferences on how to get your own practice started. Learn from each other. Share what you pick up along the way, the good and the bad. If you try something in your practice and you didn't A, think it helped patients do better, or B, you don't think it helped the practice as a whole better, share both aspects of that. Put together data. Make poster presentations. I was fortunate enough, 2007, somewhere in there, ASBP actually wanted to start some international outreach. I was invited to go to Lyon, France, and present on the data that I obtained through the years of my practice. So get involved, learn from people that have been doing it for a while.
I think that's great. Get involved with the OMA, get educated, learn about obesity medicine. But you'll never practice obesity medicine until you treat your first patient. And so that you need to apply it and make that first step and start actively treating patients with obesity and build that skill set so that you can gain from that experience as well.
And Nick, I would add to that, when you start your first treatment of obesity, keep a record of that. Start a list. And it hopefully you have a computer system that would allow you to do that, allow you to find which medicines work for best for you on the average in your practice, one versus the other. What did I teach nutritionally? How did it change? For instance, I can remember in 2002, I learned to teach don't think grams of carbs. I bet I've talked or met thousands of doctors. I don't know a doctor yet that knows what a gram of carbs looks like. I haven't met a person yet that knows what a gram of carbs looks like. But I learned to teach and think teaspoons of sugar instead of grams of carbs. Everybody can picture, wow, I'm eating this and it's 8 teaspoons of sugar when my bloodstream only wants 3/4 of a teaspoon of sugar. And so I first patient I taught that to, he came back the next month, he lost 20 some pounds. And I, whoa. Well, then I added that into my education program and I tracked the next 6 months. Did it change weight loss on pay in the patients? And on the average, in every weight category, from body mass index of 25 to body mass index of 50 or higher, weight loss improved over 20% just based on what I taught. So when you start treating obesity medicine, obesity as part of your practice, keep your data, record. When did I start teaching this? When, which medicines, what doses of the medicines did I use? How does that compare to other people's data? And that was one of the things that I did for years and years and years. I'd come to a conference and say, here's my numbers, 5,000 patients, here's my weight loss numbers. If you're getting better results than me, teach me how you're doing that.
Yeah, so track your results and modify your practice according to what works and
Sure.
avoid things that don't work. Well, that's great. Well, this has been a great discussion, Alan. I really appreciate the time and the insights and the understanding and the history of obesity. I think we've come a long ways in 75 years, but we're really I feel also just boarding the rocket ship and ready to blast off to the next level because there's so much happening in this field and it's great to be a part of it. I have to say that, being involved in obesity medicine is one of the best decisions I've made in my life after marrying my wife, of course.
Yes. Well, it kind of interesting. I started, didn't know if I should add this or not, but I actually met my wife at my first obesity medicine conference. So what happens in Las Vegas doesn't always stay there. So you never know what might happen if you
Yeah,
go to an obesity
no.
medicine conference. But Nick, I do want to personally take a second and thank you and for what you've done for the society and all the leaders that are currently spending their time, especially the leaders that stay through the years like you have. And I appreciate all that you've done for the growth of our society and what we're able to achieve. So thank you.
Well, thank you for that. It's a very exciting to be a part of all of this.
All right. Thanks, Nick.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Obesity, a Disease. For more information about obesity medicine podcasts and other valuable resources from the clinical leaders in obesity medicine, please visit www.obesitymedicine.org/podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode and want to listen regularly, head over to iTunes where you can subscribe, rate, and leave us a much appreciated review. The views expressed in this episode are those of the host and guest and do not necessarily represent the opinions, beliefs, or policies of the Obesity Medicine Association or its members. Please join us again for our next episode of Obesity, a Disease.